Last shot was at 11:30.
Wow.
Wow.
That's really Chassidish stuff. So, Bosai, we're here on Daf Lamed Aleph Lamed Aleph. And let me just reiterate what I've said in the past. This seems to have been a minhag back in the day that when a person went out to work, they would learn either for 45 minutes or an hour, just a blot Gemara, you know, Gemara Rashi and Tosfos, Gefes, you know, before they went out to work. So if anybody's interested, I have this year at 8:30 to 9:30, but that's just to test an example, meaning I'm testing the waters as to whether 8:30 to 9:30 is a good time for people. So if you know of anyone, or if you fit this category, that would like to learn for 45 minutes early in the morning, whether it be 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, just tell me. After 11:45, I'm busy.
Okay. Well, some of this will change, though, after El is over, right?
That's what I want to know. I'm preparing either for El or after El. I don't know what Masechta we're going to learn. I'm not learning Daf Yomi. I can't do Menachos. I tried. I got all the way as far as Daf Gimel. That's as far as I got. I hit Daf Gimel, and boom, I just couldn't do it. It would have taken me hours and hours to figure out what's going on at Daf Gimel. But I did make a siyum on Masechta Zvachim, so that's the first time in my life I finished the Masechta. Besides Makis, I did for my father's Velus, because that year that my father passed away, I got a psak from one of the Rabbanim that I couldn't invite my students for Purim because I was an oven, unless I made a siyum. So I learned up Masechta Makis. Do you want to hear a quick story about Masechta Makis? Mm-hmm. My father had a childhood friend. His name was Chaim Zimmerman. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Yeah, so Chaim Zimmerman and my father were very close. And it was during the 9 days. They were walking on the boardwalk in Brighton Beach. Now, you have to understand that those days, this is almost a century ago, the boardwalk was full of kosher places. It was mamish Yiddish shtut. So Chaim says to my father, "Let's buy a salami." So, of course, my father looked at him like he was crazy. It was 9 days. But, you know, with Chaim, you don't ask any questions. So they went in, they bought a salami. So they sit down on the beach, not on the boardwalk, on the beach, and Chaim pulls out a Gemara Makis. He starts in Daf Beis, and after an hour, or maybe an hour and a half, he finishes the Masechta, makes a siman, and they eat the salami. It's a true story. So there are people who learn up Masechtas, you know, but I never was trained in that way. So now yesterday we started learning in the Mechaber the issue of what happens if you don't have the Dalad Minim. Is it ball game over? What should you do in that case? So the Mechaber bases his psak on two sources, both of which are here on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. One is a Braisa, which the Gemara interprets on Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, and the other is a Tosfos, which is the last Tosfos here on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. And as my Rebbe used to always say to us, be careful of the small Tosfos. So if you take a look, Vahasanya, five lines up from the bottom of the page, it says the following: Arbas Minim Shebelulav. Right, we have the four species of the lulav. Kishem she'ein pochsim mehem, kach ein mosifin aleh. And this opening line and a half of the braisa, it needs a lot of work. You can spend weeks on that, because in Baltosif and Baltigra, which is, by the way, this week's parasha. But what we want to look at is the next part of the braisa. And the braisa says, lo motza esrog, if he doesn't find an esrog, well, what should he do in that case? You know, back in the day, this was quite common. Even today, it's not so easy to find a kosher esrog. But today, you know, you walk into an esrog store, they probably have 50 different esrogim for you to choose from. But back in the day, it was hard to get an esrog. So they didn't have an esrog. So you and I might have thought that perhaps in the absence of an esrog, Chotch at least let him take something that looks like an esrog, or at least it's a fruit. So the braisa says no. Lo yavi, lo parish, velo rimon, velo dover acher. He should not take a parish. Rashi tells you in French what it is. And that, according to the art school, it's a quince. It's a little bit similar in the old French, but anyway, it's
according to Steinsaltz also.
Good. So if Steinsaltz agrees with Art Scroll, then we have two of the Gedolei Hador. So now we can feel absolutely confident that we know what a parish is. A parish is a quince. Again, if you ask me what a quince is, that's a more complicated question. Show and tell. You'll bring us a quince. Velo Rimon. Oh, that I know what a Rimon looks like. That would be my first choice for an answer if I didn't have one. Velo Dovarach. Then the Mishnah goes on to record a machlokas on a different issue, and that is whether Yovesh is possible. And Rabbi Yehuda says that you're allowed to take an esrog hayovesh. The Chachamim say no. Kmushim ksherim, but yoveshim psulim. If it's only dry, but there's still some level of minimum moisture to it, then you're allowed to take it. But if it's absolutely dried up, then it's possible. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Meaning that Rabbi Yehuda denies the halach of hadar the way the Chacham understood hadar. Hadar requires some minimum moisture, lach luchis. You know, you can have an esrog that's dry, but it's not totally dry. And that Chachamim say is still hadar, barely so. But Rabbi Yehuda says no. That's not even necessary. You can have an esrog that's totally dried out. And that's going to be problematic because the Gemara beforehand, in the name of Rava, which is a sugya that we touched on earlier this week, Rava insists that even Rabbi Yehuda disagrees only in the case of lulav hayavish, but in the case of esrog hayavish, because the Torah explicitly says priates hadar, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that yavish is possible. So this brice is a stira to Rava, and that's why this brice is quoted here. But we're interested in studying a different line in the Braisa, and that is, do you take a substitute for one of the Dalet Minim in the absence of that Min? And the Gemara obviously is focused on what was probably very common in that day, that it was hard to find an Esrog. And Gemara says that according to this Braisa, if you don't find an Esrog, fafalin, it's gone, it's lost, stay home, don't go to shul that day, don't bother with Dalet Minim, and don't even dream of taking a quince, or a pomegranate, or a mango, or whatever your favorite fruit might be, forget it. You've got three minim, and that doesn't cut the mustard. So if you take a look at the Gemara, and this is on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, you count down about 10 lines, you'll see the line starts with the word koi kamashmal, and you have that? Omar Mar, that's the part we want to read. Omar Mar, the Braisa says, Lo Motza Esrog, Lo Yovi, Lo Rimom, Lo Parish, Lo Dover Acher. Frek the Gemara Pshita. What was the Hava mean? The Torah tells you to take an Esrog. So you're going to take, you're an Ibachachem, so you're going to take a quince, because you like to eat quinces. So after Sukkot, you'll cook it and you'll eat the quince. So Pshita. Oh. Mao the same. Now watch this. Watch this Havamina here. Let's take a fruit instead of an esrog. Why? Ki hechi delo tishtakach toras esrog, so that we shouldn't forget that there is such a thing as an esrog. Meaning, if year in and year out you don't have access to an esrog, you know, after decades go by, you're going to forget about the esrog. So we have to have a sort of like a memory device, you know, something that fits the shoes, you know, slips into the shoes of an esrog. It's a quasi-esrog. It's what Trump would call fake news. But at least we remember that this is an esrog. Kamash Malan, the Bryce wants to tell me no. Pumfakeret. Zimnin did nothing churvamine. If years and years are going to go by, and instead of an esrog you take a quince, then either you or maybe one of your children or grandchildren, Asi Lemisrach, you're going to make a kilkul here. You're going to assume that, you know what? It doesn't have to be an esrog. Okay, the Torah mentions an esrog. You know, pri eitz hadar. It doesn't even mention an esrog. It says a pri. So maybe any pri will do. And if I, you know, my father, my grandfather, they've been taking quinces for the last 20 years, the last 50 years. So I'm also going to take a quince. So it's very fascinating, Rabbi Osai, that the Mao de Seima and the Kamashvalon are going from one extreme to the other. You know, sometimes you have machlokas that takes you from here till here, but here it's from here to here. In the Mao de Seima, the Mao de Seima advocates in favor of taking a fruit so that we remind ourselves that there still is such an entity of a fourth min. There's no such thing as three minim. There's a fourth min. We don't have the fourth min, but we're going to make a kind of a quasi fourth min. But that's going to remind us of the fourth min. And the Kamashma goes to the other extreme. We don't tolerate a fourth min if it's not an Esser. Because what's going to happen is Asi Lemisrach. There's going to be a kilkul that comes out of this. You think you're doing a good thing for the Jews. You're doing a bad thing for the Jews. Because ultimately what might happen is that people are going to think that a pre-Eitz Hadar could be fulfilled with a different fruit. So now I want to point out to you a Tosus at the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Let me give a little bit of a background of an introduction to this Tosus. We've been discussing a case where he simply doesn't have an Esra. But we also have something called a Psul in an Esra, or any of the Dalet Min. V'yesh Lachkar, let's raise the Fan Chakira. An Esra that's Pasul. What's the status of an Esra that's Pasul? One way of saying it is saying, well, if it's Pasul, then it's Pasul. It's not an Esra. I mean, you can call it an Esra if you like, but al pidin, it's not an Esra. The other way is to say, well, it's an Esrog, you can't deny it, it's a min Esrog, but it's puzzle. Why is it puzzle? Maybe it doesn't have the shear of an Esrog, maybe it's too green and it should be yellow, maybe it's dried out. There may be many different reasons why the Esrog is puzzle. Perhaps it was Niktav Rosho and you don't have the pitum. But at least Chach, it's an Esrog. Tosfos says the following. Yesh l'dakde, let's be careful and read this braisa meticulously. You have it, it's the last tosis on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. It's a small tosis, but it's packed full of meaning. Don't judge a book by its cover here. This is a very heavy tosis. He says, Lo matza esrog, lo yavi, lo rimon, v'lo parish. Yesh l'dakde mikan. What does the braisa tell you? Don't take what?
Another fruit.
It says, don't take another fruit. It says, Tosis Yesh L'dagde Mikan. What if you have an Esrog? Dim Lo Matza Kosher Mivarech Bipsul. Now, Rabosai, take brackets for a moment, just for pedagogical reasons, and bracket the word Mivarech. Or, what does it say? Yeah, Mivarech. Because we're going to have a whole long discussion about the word Mevarech. But let's make believe that it's not there. Just so that we go stage by stage through the logic here in analyzing this Tosus. Let's say it would say in Tosus, Lo matza kosher, yikach psul. I'm not going to go as far as to allow you to make a brach on a pasul esrog. That's maybe an unbelievable chiddush in Tosus. But at least let's understand one level. You remember that the maskana of HaGemara is that you don't take another species, you don't take another fruit. That's a no-no. That's absolutely objectionable. Where the Chachamim were afraid of a sirachon, of a kilkul that's going to come out of that. Tosis is saying, but at least in the case of an esrog, albeit an esrog pasul, I'm going to encourage you to take that esrog. Again, then Tosis is going to go even further than that, you know, and he's going to say, well, I'll even make a brach on that esrog. That's mind-boggling. The esrog is pasul, and you're making a brach on a pasul esrog. Can you imagine what happens? Imagine what pashkevillas they'll put up against you in Mea Sha'arim if they find out that you encourage people to make a bracha on a pasul esrog. So you'll tell them, but Tosa says so. That's not good enough, you know. But leave out the bracha for a moment. Let's just go shlav, shlav. In the first shlav, Tosa says that we're going to encourage you for the esrog, which you don't have, but you have a pasul esrog, so you do have an esrog, and that's called an esrog. Take the esrog. And at this point, Tosa thinks he has a very solid diuk. Because we always have a rule of thumb that when we learn a Mishnah or a Braisa, we always assume that the Braisa or the Mishnah is going to tell me the bigger chiddush. And in this case, the Braisa tells you, don't take a quince. Couldn't the Braisa have told me a bigger chiddush? Don't take an esrog. Why? Because the esrog is possible. The statement. So Tosis says, Yesh ledagdik mikan, diem lo matza kosher, mevarech bepasul, bininokat. What does he mention here? Parish or Rimon. And then he says, Yesh ledchus. You know, we got very hyped up, we got very excited about the diuk. Personally, I would say, it's a brilliant diuk. Let the Baisa tell me a bigger chiddush. And then Tosis says, don't get carried away. It's Yesh ledchus. So the Marsha here wants to suggest that Yesh Lidchos, he's talking about the Bracha. And Tosis still maintains that the Diuk is a correct Diuk as far as whether you should take the Esrog Pasul. But don't go too far and therefore assume that you should take the Bracha, that you should make a Bracha on it. The Sfas Emes, who lived about 150 years ago, even less, 120 years ago, he didn't go as far as, he didn't have the Marsha on his radar screen. He thought that Tosis was completely rejecting his Dechia, and therefore Tosis Lamaskana says at this point in Tosis, we'll see the last line in Tosis, that there's no proof here that you should take an Esrog Pasul. And then he says, Aval Yesh Ledadek Dishari. Dishari. In other words, I do have a Diuk, that the choice is yours. That's called Dishari. Dishari means we're going to allow you to take an Esrog Pasul, in contrast to what, Rabbi Osai? A quince. A quince we're not going to even allow you to take, but we're going to allow you to take an Esrog Pasul, and we're not going to apply the principle of what? Of Shema, of Dilma, Asi L'Misrach. Because if you remember, the Maskana of Dilma Osi L'Misrach took us to the other extreme, and we're not even going to tolerate taking another fruit as a substitute. Al Yesh L'Dagdek, what you could have a valid digduk, a diuk, is the shari, that if you are so inclined and you're motivated to take an Esrog Pasul, that we're going to allow you. Kimo Lulav Pasul Rabbanan B'Shasadcha. There's a sugya later on, and we'll get to it in Mirtz Hashem on Daf Lamed Vav. The Gemara says that there's something called a shas hadchak, and a shas hadchak might mean that for the entire community, it's a shas hadchak. We don't have access to lulavim, and the Gemara is going to say that you can take a lulav pasul. Again, some Rishonim are going to learn that lulav pasul is not really pasul. And that there are going to be three categories of lulavim. There's a lulav which is the right lulav to take, and that's a kosher lulav. Then on the other extreme, there's going to be a lulav that's completely pasul, that's worthless. And in the middle, there's going to be a lulav which is kosher but not kosher. And b'shas adchak, we're going to take that lulav. So Tosa says that in the case of a person on an individual level, a private level, he's a private citizen, he doesn't have access to an esrog. So Tosis says we're going to allow him to take an Esrog Pasul, that's what he has. The best he can get is an Esrog that's disqualified. We're going to allow him to take the Esrog that's disqualified. Just like the Gemara says that B'Shas HaDchak, you can take a Lulav Pasul. The Sfas Emes is not happy with this. He doesn't understand how Tosis can make that equation. There's a new halacha called Shas HaDchak. Now, where do we find a source for this new halacha called Shas HaDchak, which breaks all the rules and the universal principles and conditions? For example, according to Sfas Emes, if you don't have a lulav kosher or an esrog kosher, whatever it might be, you did not take it. I, Tosis, has a sugya of Shas HaDchak. That's different. Shas HaDchak is a separate category. Where do we find a precedent for Shas HaDchak? The Sfas Emes doesn't quote a precedent. So Lefi Anius Daiti, the precedent to the Sfas Emes is a Gemara about Ner Chanukah. And the Gemara says that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is mi Pesach beso mi bachutz. But the Gemara says b'shas hadchak, and Rashi explains that there were enemies of the Jewish people that would attack the Jewish people for lighting Chanukah candles. That was absolutely forbidden in those places, in those anti-Semitic communities. So then you're allowed to meniach al shulchan avidayah. You're allowed to put the Ner Chanukah on your table. So the Brisker Rav is very famous for saying in that Gemara that B'Shas HaDchak sets up a new takana. It's not the real Makoy Ner Chanukah. It's like a substitute for the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So the Sfas Emes, again, he's not aware of this Brisker Rav, but the Sfas Emes is basically saying that Tosfos has no right to compare a Pasul Esrog to the Gemara Vayta. The Gemara is going to talk about Shas HaDchak, and the Gemara is going to allow us, and maybe even encourage us, to take a lulav Pasul because of Shas HaDchak. And the Sfas Emes objects. He says the Tosfos has no right to compare a person who can't find the kosher esrog to the Gemara about Shas HaDchak. Shas HaDchak should press a button that says a brand new mitzvah appears on the screen, a new takana. Chachamim could be mesaken that there's a mitzvah derabbanan. So that we have two categories of mitzvahs. We have a mitzvah d'oraisa, and then we have a mitzvah derabbanan. And now the Sfas Emes is saying that even in a mitzvah d'rabbanan, you could have two categories. You could have a bona fide mitzvah d'rabbanan like Ner Chanukah, Mi Pesach Beso, Umi Bachutz. And then you could have a mitzvah d'rabbanan that's called what? Shas HaDchak. And Shas HaDchak engenders a new takana with a new mitzvah unto itself. And now Ner Chanukah, for example, bifurcates, it splits into two, and there are two subcategories. There's the category of a real Ner Chanukah Derabbanan, and then there's the fake Ner Chanukah, which is called the Shas HaDchak, and that too is a mitzvah Midrabbanan on the level of Shas HaDchak. But don't equate that. So it's parallel in lulav would be if you had a lulav pasul b'Shas HaDchak. So then we're gonna institute a Shas HaDchak, and that's gonna be a new takana, take a lulav pasul. But our Gemara is addressing a whole different set of circumstances. We're talking about a person who can't never find, he doesn't have access to a kosher esrog. And now Tosfos is saying that we should take a pasul esrog and we should equate that with the Gemara of Shas HaDchak. That's not the Gemara of Shas HaDchak, says the Sfas Emes. So again, I'm not coming here right now to Paskin Halacha. If we get a chance in Mitzvah Shem, B'li Neder, we'll go through the Poskim, what to do in a case where you don't have a kosher esrog, and this is a very relevant issue. Baruch Hashem today, as I said at the outset, the market is flooded with esrogim. Hopefully they're all real esrogim. I can't vouch for that. Lulavim, I can vouch for the fact that they're not all lulavim. They may look like a lulav, but doesn't taste like a lulav. I'm just joking. And it's very relevant to know. My father tells me that back in his hometown, there were like three sets of dalet minim for the entire community. So it was matan al menas lahachzer as you stood online on the first day, you know, passing it down. And there were so many stories about the Holocaust and after the camps were freed. And you know, somebody, you know, if 5 years after the Holocaust found a kosher set of dalet minim, you know. So it's not always true in Jewish history. We're a little bit spoiled when we assume that we're going to find dalet minim. So if the Sfas Emes was here in the room, he would paskin the following. If we can apply the principle of Shas HaDchak, then take a pasul, a lulav, or an esrog, whatever it might be. But if it's not defined as a Shas HaDchak, but it's a personal, individual situation where you have no access to what? To a kosher esrog, then mehechetes. Oh, but now, let's understand what Tosfos means by Yesh Lidchos. After all, it's Lechora, the Diuk of Tosfos is brilliant. The Gemara says that Mal Detema, we have two ways of understanding a situation of the absence of an esrog. There is no esrog to be had. And in the Havmina, we want to suggest, well, you know what? We should take a fruit that at least remind us of an esrog. The maskana chas v'shalom. Don't you dare even entertain that possibility, because dilma asi lemisrach. Right? The Gemara says nafik churva mine. It's a terrible thing because people are going to start taking quinces instead of esrogim. You know, as time goes on. Says Tosfos, the whole discussion here about dilma Dilma what? Dilma asi nafik churbiyne asi lemisrach. That's only because he's taking a different. He's taking a different min. He doesn't have an esrog, says Tosus. But if he has an esrog, ella what? The esrog is possible. That we should certainly accept a mal de tema, and there's no reason to assume asi lemisrach. That chiddush. That Asi L'Misrach should apply even in an Esrog, but it's a Pasul Esrog, that we don't find. That Chiddush, we didn't go that far. So what's V'yesh Lidchos? Do you follow me emotionally? I'm totally committed to the Diyuk of Tosus. V'yesh L'Dagdik, says Tosus. Why does he backtrack? And then he says, but you know what, I do have a good Diyuk from the Gemara about Shas HaTchak, which the Sfasemis goes wild. He says, well, what's the connection to Shas HaTchak? So there's another way of learning this Tosus. And if you learn this Tosus, I think, in the second way, then maybe we could understand why Tosus says V'yesh Lidchos. Let's read the Tosus again. You remember we skipped one word. So now let's go back to the word that we skipped. Yesh L'dagdik Mikan She'im Lo Matzah Kosher. We have an Esrog, but just the problem is it's possible for any number of possible reasons. Mevarech bipsul. And what's the diuk? The diuk is from the fact that the Gemara here discusses the mal detem in the kamashma with regard to a different species. But if it would have been an esrog, then take it. And if you're taking it, make a brach on it. Says Tosus v'yesh lidchos. Why? Because the braisa wants to tell you a chiddush that you don't even have the option of taking another min. The chiddush of the braisa, the thrust of this braisa is, don't be an imur chacham and say, well, you know what, I want to do something that looks like it's a fake imitation of the dalet minim. I'm going to take three good minim and the fourth, well, okay, it's a quince. Says the braisa, no, we're not going to even allow you to do such a thing. That's a no-no. The braisa here is addressing the following question. In certain circumstances, do you have a green light, you have license to take something as a quasi-dalet minim, and you'll tell me what motivates you to do so, because shemetish takak toris esrog, comes along the braisa to tell you, no, you're not allowed to take a fourth min. Ah, now you want to make a deal. But let's say it's not a fourth min, it's not a substitute min, but it's an esrog, it's possible. So in that case, you can derive the conclusion that, and the deal is a perfectly good deal, that maybe you would be allowed to do so. But Tosa says you can't derive the conclusion that by allowing you to do so, you can make a brach. That deal is a false deal. In other words, yesh lachkar. We're back to basics. We can differentiate an halacha between the following three categories. One category is a chiyuv, the other category is a rishus, and the third category is an iser. Tosfos wants to derive the conclusion that if you have an esrog, albeit it's an esrog, but it's possible, then it's not only that you're not allowed to take that esrog, which is possible. In other words, we're not only negating Isur, but we're going all the way to the other extreme, and we're telling you you're required to do so. It's a chiyuv. Where do I? That's a chutz from my part. Where do I have the audacity to say that Tosus wants to say that if it's possible, you have a chiyuv to take it? Not a heter, but a chiyuv. John, can you help me out here? You always come through in the clutch. Why does Berzon have the audacity to say the following? This is a chutzpah. You should throw quinces at me. And if you have an esrog, throw an esrog at me. The mission is going to later on codify that they used to take the esrogim and pelt people. So you should pelt me with your esrogim. Okay, I'm lucky you didn't take your esrogim to shiur today. I'm saying something really chutzpahic. I'm saying that Tosfos is raising the option that not only are you allowed to take an esrog posel if you don't have a kosher, but that you're required to take one. Where do I come off saying such a thing?
Mevorach.
Excellent. Because Tosa says you make a brach on it. You can only make a bracha on it if it's begeder chiyuv. So Tos says yesh lidchos. I can't prove a thing from this brisa, because this brisa is addressing a different question, not the question of chiyuv. That was never even on the radar screen. There was never a havamin in the brisa that there'd be a chiyuv. The issue was, is it an isur or is it a rishus? Do we have license to take this quince instead of an esrog? Or shall we object and say, don't even do that, because if you do that, it's going to lead to a gilgal? But to go ahead and make a deal from this brisa and go as far as to say that you have a chiyuv to take in the case of apostle Ezra, right? What's your deal? By Medvarim, when the brisa discussing this and back and forth, take it, no, take it, that's only if you don't have an Ezra, you're taking another min. But if it would have been a min Ezra, just that it's possible, then the brisa would certainly advocate in favor of it. No, says Tosi Yesh Lidchot. If you had an esrog possible, the brisa would not advocate take the esrog. The brisa might allow you to take the esrog, and there's no dilma osi lemisra. Take for example, I have in front of me an esrog yavesh. So Tosi says, if you don't have another esrog, this esrog is possible. Take the esrog together with the other three minim and make a bracha on it. Tos says no. You can't make a bracha on apostle esrog, an esrog on yovesh. But ask yourself a different question. Am I allowed to take it? Is there a violation of the iser of dilma asi lemisrach? Tos says that I have a good diyakon. So the yesh lidchos means that if you have no esrog at all, and you want to take a quince instead of the esrog, what's going to be the din? It's awesome. I want everyone to say that word together. It's awesome. It's awesome. If on the other hand you have an esrog, but it's possible, it's yavesh, then in the halamin of Tosfos yesh lidchos, what would be the din? You mechuyev to take it. You absolutely have to take it. Haraya, Tosfos suggests that you make a bracha on it. Pili plan, you're making a bracha on apostle esrog, an esrog yavesh. It's completely dry, no lachlukas. No, says Tosfos yesh lidchos. However, if you want to ask a different question, I have no esrog kosher, I have an esrog that's yavesh. Am I allowed to take the esrog yavesh? What's Tosfos' answer? Yes, you're allowed. Why? Because the brisa only forbids you for taking a substitute min. Now let's try to understand. Why is it that Dilma Asi Lemisrach applies to the case of a quince, but doesn't apply to the case of an Esrog HaYavesh? So I'm thinking out loud. Anybody want to think out loud with me? Why is there no Dilma Asi Lemisrach? Imagine if I took an Esrog HaYavesh, it's totally possible, and I'm allowed to do so. What happened to the Dilma Asi Lemisrach? Where did that go down the tubes?
At least it's the same min.
It's in the same min.
Okay, that's good. That's a good start, Phil. Okay, it's the same min, but why aren't you afraid that next year I'll take a dry one? Mitch?
You won't forget.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, I also agree with you that according to Tosfos Maskoni, you're not going to forget. Why not? Why aren't I going to forget? Why can't you... Again, I'm going to argue from the opposite perspective, the devil's advocate. Why not say the following? If we're going to allow you to take what? To take an esrog yavesh, then next year you're going to take an esrog yavesh. Just like we said that if we allow you to take a quince, next year you're going to take a quince. And that's called asi lemisrach. The brisa absolutely forbids that. Why not apply the same logic to an esrog yavesh, Mitch?
You know, you're not making a bracha, so that's going to remind you
of this. Oh, okay. That's one way of saying it. But again, are you advocating allowing someone to take a quince without a bracha?
No, a quince not.
So the absence of a bracha is not going to clinch, or shall I say, bury the chashash of dilma asi lemisrach. So I don't think it's enough just to say that you omit the bracha. You're going to have to go beyond that. But I'll ask you the following question. Again, this is the way I'm thinking, and maybe I'm, you know, you could certainly disagree with me. This is not Torah's lashon. You have in front of you two esrog. One is yavesh, and the other is moist. Which esrog are you going to take? The moist esrog, right? The beautiful esrog. In other words, how much of an Am HaAretz can a person be that Dilma Asi LeMisrach applies, that if we allow him to take the Yavesh today, then tomorrow down the line, Yesh Bachalav, he's going to take a Yavesh again. Again, if he has no other esrog, say Nachinami, we're going to allow him to take the Yavesh. But what are you going to say to me? He takes the Yavesh, and he's going to come to the conclusion that, you know what, I might as well always take a Yavesh.
That could happen.
Could happen. But maybe that chashash is not strong enough to generate this Isur. If you take another min, so you're saying, you know what, this is a min esrog. At some point, people think, pre-Eitz Hadar, yeah, look, this is my favorite, I like mangoes, you know. I used to like papaya, but I started borrowing papaya. I'm probably not pronouncing it right, papaya, right? And what I find is, if you cut a papaya, it's inedible. You know, you have to wait till it gets soft. And if you wait till it gets soft, it becomes a yavish, because you have to wait at least 12 months till it gets soft. I'm exaggerating. But mango? Wonderful. That's the nicest thing about going to Florida. If you like mangoes, the mangoes are literally on the streets. You don't even have to buy them. Usually they get a maca, you know, when they hit the ground. So you take your favorite fruit. You take your favorite fruit, and after a while, people think that's pre-Eitz Hadar. That's Dilma Asi LeMisrach. But if you know that you have to take what? An esrog. Now we have to worry. He's going to convince himself that he can take a yavesh. He's got out there in the streets, in this shuk, you know, he's got options to take an esrog that's not yavesh. He's got lachlukas. No, he's going to take a yavesh. That far we're not going to go. And that's the diuk of Tosis. That diuk Tosis is willing to accept. So in the initial Hadamin of Tosis, Tosis wanted to go as far as to say that the Braisa left out an Esrog Yavesh, because the Braisa would advocate that you take an Esrog Yavesh. And if you advocate in favor of an Esrog Yavesh, that means it's a Chiyuv. Kamashmal and says Tosis Yesh Lidchos. No, this Braisa is not discussing Chiyuv. There was never a Hadamin of taking anything but an Esrog Kosher. What this Braisa is discussing is an Iser versus a Heter. And the Braisa says that in the case of a substitute min, a different pre, it's asur. What would be, says Tosus, in a case of a min esrog, but it's possible, it's mutter. But don't make a bracha. So the maskan of Tosus at this point would be that if you only have an esrog yavesh, if you're so inclined, take the esrog yavesh, but don't make a bracha on it. You only have a reshus, it's not what? It's not a chiyuv. Then Tosus introduces another deal. The Gemara is going to later on say something about Shas HaDchak. And for you, this is a personal Shas HaDchak. You know, the year Tovshin Ayin Tes, that's what we're going to be up to, right? Got to get used to that change in the year. So Tovshin Ayin Tes, all I could find was an Esrog HaYavesh. That's all I could get my hands on. You know, I was out in, you know, in the boondocks, and that's the best I could do. That's your Shas HaDchak. And here's where the Sfasemis gets up and he says, no. Shas HaDchak is a separate takana, and that doesn't apply just because you're stuck in the boondocks. Remember? I know you wanted to say something. Okay. So that I found a very exciting thing. As I say, it looks like an innocuous tosis here, but when you analyze it, there's a lot here.
Could it be that, to be medayik on the lashon here, the Shas HaChak is only by a Lulav and not by an Esrog?
Yeah, that could be. But if that be the case, you want to know why Shas HaChak should only apply to a Lulav and not to an Esrog. Meaning, if you're stuck in a situation where there's nothing out there in the Shuk...
Because the Pre-Eitz Hadar is specifically Esrog. So then, I have an Esrog, but I don't have a good Lulav.
I mean, even according to the Chachamim who say that Pre-Eitz Hadar applies to all four Minim, you're not going to Rabbi Yehuda.
No.
So even though the Chachamim have an equation between Esrog and all four Minim, the Hekesh, but nevertheless, the Torah wrote Pre-Eitz Hadar where? Where is it explicit in the Torah? Meaning the difference between Torah Shepetzav and Torah Shebalpeh? Only in Esrog. So maybe the standards of Esrog are so high that we're not going to institute a Shas HaDchak. That could be another way of rejecting Tosis. But Tosis right now is of the opinion that we equate Pre-Eitz Hadar with all four Minim, And therefore, not only is an Esrog Yovesh possible, but a Lulav Yovesh is possible. And if a Lulav Yovesh is possible, at least on the first day, because of the Pre-Eitz Hodah requirement, then Tosa says, the Gemara says, V'shasat Chak, you have nothing else but a Lulav Yovesh, take the Lulav Yovesh. Would Tosas advocate in favor of making a bracha on the Lulav Yovesh? Maybe yes. Why? Because it's Shasat Chak. And if it's Shasat Chak, it's no different than Meiniach al Shulchano Vidayo. And the Gemara says in Meiniach al Shulchano Vidayo, the poskim say that you make a bracha. When I was a kid, we used to light Ner Chanukah inside. Today, here in Eretz Yisrael at least, it's mamish like a chok v'lo yaver, everybody lights Ner Chanukah outside. And the reason I think that in Eretz Yisrael we took this on is because that was the original mitzvah. The ideal perfect mitzvah of Ner Chanukah was to put it on the outside. Again, when we say in the outside, I don't mean all the way on the outside. It's got to be within a certain radius close to the Pesach Beiso. In Chutz La'aretz, somehow the minhag became to light on the inside. When I was living in New York City in my childhood, the only Chanukiyot you saw on the outside were electric. Do you remember the electric ones? Yeah. Today, unfortunately, we're in a tragic era where you'll see right next to the lit electric Chanukiyah, you'll see a certain tree. We won't mention what that tree is. Have you seen that? Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. So they say that's being politically correct. Halachically, I have my doubts.
It should be a mixed marriage, I think.
No, I don't think it's a mixed marriage. You'll see it in companies, and you'll see it in the White House, and you'll see, it's political correctness, because if I put just a Christmas tree. Now, I don't know if that time of the year the Muslims have any celebrations. So maybe they're going to add a third thing. Now the Muslims are taking over. I think there are 6 million Muslims in America today. And now they're getting into the Congress. I think the second Muslim is about to enter into the Congress. If she wins the election, which I think she's a shoo-in for the election.
Here, it's easier to light the Chanukah outside. I mean, we're in a Jewish...
Correct. So let's go back to the original. Why use a Shasat Chak mitzvah, which is a fallback mitzvah, when you can do it the right way? It's almost part of Jewish pride. Because what's Chanukah all about? It's about Jewish pride. That God loves us as a people. We're the chosen nation. We're chosen for good and for other things too.
That's what a Shasat Chak is. It's not that this is the way you should do it. It's B'shas T'chak.
Correct. I mean, it's a new kind of replacement for the original bits.
Because it's not instead of, it's...
Right.
But because the power...
Right. We're not undoing the original mitzvah. Right. The original mitzvah stays as a mitzvah.
Because of the power of minhag and the power of tradition, B'shas T'chak becomes ikar.
So that's
how do you want to say that we should do away with the original mitzvah?
For example... Huh. Many people use horseradish for moror. Why? Why?
Because I love raw horseradish.
Because in Europe, they didn't have lettuce. They didn't grow. So that became the tradition, even though it may not be l'chatchila the best thing to take. Nowadays, you have chasa, and nevertheless, people use horseradish.
Yeah, we try to make a combination there.
But why do we do that? Because we have a tradition to use horseradish. But that tradition is a Shasat Chak tradition.
And we want to maintain that because
that's
it has a status of a minhag.
And that's what happens.
Because we have a minhag and we want to keep that minhag going.
The Osi the Misrach could very well happen with the Pasul de Gethin, the Yovesh, because of the tradition. If you have a Hasidish Rebbe who doesn't have anything else, and he brings a lulav yovesh,
right,
bidiavad, chassid will say, we did that for 10 years, that's what we have to do.
So that's the Sfasemis, he was a chassid shereb. But according to Tosis says that it's worth it. It's better, if you compare the good and the bad, it's better to do it that way. Okay, Rabosai, now we go on to another issue, and that's setting up a sukkah in a public area. Have you seen that? Have you seen that in the reality in the world that you live in?
New York City, the Bryant Park sukkah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have it in Wall my Street. In my street on my street.
Here.
Yeah.
On my street, I have it on Rehov Scholzen. If you go down to the Shuk, you know, the Machne Yehuda, you'll see sukkahs all over the place, and they're on Rishus HaRabim. So what's the deal with the sukkah on Rishus HaRabim? Right here on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. We'll go a little bit earlier on the Daf. You count down from the top two lines, Tana Rabbanon, Sukkah Gzula, V'amesachseich Rishus HaRabim, Rabbi Eliezer Posse. So let's stop with Rabbi Eliezer. Well, you know, we may have better news at the end of the day if we accept the Chachamim Shita. But right now, let's talk about Rabbi Eliezer. And it's possible that some poskim will accept Rabbi Eliezer. And certainly, l'chatchila, they'll accept Rabbi Eliezer. So now, if you're talking about a sukkah gzula, so fundamentally, the Gemara says even the Chachamim agree that a sukkah gzula is excluded. The only thing is that they have a rule called karka eina nigzelis, whereas Rabbi Eliezer, he was of the opinion that karka nigzelis. So now, if we take Rabbi Eliezer's perspective, then the Brisa opens up with what kind of disqualified sukkah? A sukkah gzula. That's the opening line in the Brisa. And that's disqualified according to Rabbi Eliezer. Why? Because it's a stolen... It's a stolen sukkah. So you're sitting in your sukkah, and I come and I throw you out of your sukkah, and I take over your sukkah. When I sit in the sukkah, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's a sukkah gzula. In the same breath, and Rav Nachman in the Gemara is going to make a big deal about this, that in the same breath, the Braisa talks about Hamasachech Birshus HaRabim. He sets up his sukkah in a public area. That too is a sukkah gzula according to Rabbi Eliezer, because karka nigzelis. And again, the Gaon, and way before the Gaon, the Ramah, both paskin, as we'll see in Mirtz Hashem, that although we paskin like the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer, l'chatchila, even the Chachamim were opposed to sitting in a sukkah gzula or a sukkah b'rishus HaRabim.
Rashi says Gezel Rabim. Gezel
HaRabim. Correct. Rashi says that this is called the Sukkah Gzula because he's stealing the Rabim. Again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, according to the Chachamim, that's not a problem because Karka ain't an exelis. So, to the same extent that the Rabbanan are going to say that a Sukkah Gzula, if I throw you out of your Sukkah, I could be Yotzi the Mitzvah of Sukkah by sitting in that Sukkah. So, too, if you set up your Sukkah in Rishus HaRabim, you could be Yotzi the Mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah in Rishus HaRabim because Karka ain't an exelis. However, according to Rabbi Eliezer, and according to the poskim, even the Chachamim L'chatchila will agree with Rabbi Eliezer, it's possible. Why? Because it's a Sukkah Gzula. Now, there are a number of questions that we have to ask on this sugya. First of all, what happened to the entire sugya here on Daf Lamed that the Gemara seems to be oblivious of? And that's Mitzvah Baba Vera. Why don't we apply the principle of Mitzvah Baba Vera? And here, by the way, Karka Einin Igzelis is not really going to help us, because Karka Einin Igzelis has to do with Kinyon Igzela, which means that you can never take a piece of real estate out of the domain of its owner. Wherever it is, no matter who's sitting on it, it's always Becheskes Baal Leha. However, as far as the Aveir of Gezel is concerned, Kuliyavolo Pligi, that even in Karka there's a violation of Gzela. And therefore, this sugya boggles the mind, because the Gemara seems to be totally oblivious to the issue of Mitzvah Baba Vera here, which should be an issue even according to the Chachamim, who maintain the Karka ain't an exelis, but there is an Isur Gzel of Lotigzel and Karka as well. Then we have to ask another question. When it says here, Mesachech Birshus HaRabim, so the question is as follows. if I throw you out of your sukkah and I sit in your sukkah, which is the first case in the Braisa, so that's called sukkah gzula, as the Gemara explains later on. There, the ganze sukkah belongs to the nigzal. The schach belongs to the nigzal. The defanos belong to the nigzal. The karka belongs to the nigzal. Everything belongs to Reuven. And Shimon now evicts Reuven from the sukkah and sits in Reuven's sukkah. So whose sukkah is it? It's Reuven's sukkah. That's called the sukkah gzula. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, since there's gzelin karka, therefore, it's a sukkah gzula and it's possible. But in the case of Mesachis B'Rishus HaRabim, I admit to you that the karka might be nigzelis, and that depends upon Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, but who says he stole the defanos? So who says he stole the schach? The Gemara later on discussed a different case where somebody steals Eitzim and he uses it for schach on his sukkah. And the Gemara wants to say that maybe that should be a sukkah gzula. Or it might be possible if you hold lecha lemu'ute she'ula, because you have to have ownership. So that's an issue. So the Gemara goes back and forth, and the Gemara concludes that once he puts the Eitzim that he stole from Reuven onto his schach, he was kona v'shini Hashem. And if he's kona v'shini Hashem, it's no longer called the sukkah gzula, it's no longer called the sukkah she'ula, he has a full-fledged kid. But leaving that on the side, here's a case where he builds a sukkah in Rishus HaRabim. And again, Rabbi will say, this is a very common situation. I mentioned to you that I see it every sukkah, because the parking area in front of my house in Scholzen number 16, and for that matter, it's also Scholzen number 12, and it goes all the way up to number 6. There's a parking area which is Rishus HaRabim. It doesn't belong to anybody. And yet, one sukkah after the other. You could probably count on that stretch at least 10 sukkahs. And they have pulley systems, you know, from the house, you know, they bring in the food. Because who wants to climb 6 flights on Yontif, you know, to bring that? There's a whole industry has developed about how to steal Rishus HaRabim for your sukkah. Rabbi Eliezer, for one, I think, would be very nervous about this. He says that a Masachek Rishus HaRabim is psua. Even the Chachamim, the Ramah says that we have to worry about the fact that the Chachamim themselves would object to a sukkah gzula. And with Chatchila, they would also disqualify the sukkah. But the Eved, if you did it, okay, you were Yotzei Zayin. So I saw something in one of these, you know, these things they produce. You had one before. What's it called? These, not that one, but
the Torah Parsha sheets.
Yeah, the Parsha sheets. They call them in Hebrew the Alonim, Alon. You go into some synagogues, you'll see about 30 of them. And if you have a guest who wants to come to eat with you, please tell him not to bring any of those into your house, because he inevitably leaves them in your house, and then you have to find a Seamus box, you know. So who wants the headache? Now they charge for using Seamus boxes. At least in Harnof, I don't know. So tell him, you know, if he brings one of those Alonim, then he has to, you know, he has to go out with them, you know. So I read in one of these Alonim a few years ago, I don't remember which Alon it was, that the Poskim say that in our day the Rabbim are Mochel. And they give up their rights to that area in order to allow someone to build a sukkah there. I can't park my car. Not only I can't park my car in front of my house, I can't park my car all the way to Scholzen number six, which is about a half a mile away. I'm just exaggerating. But not only that, even in front of Scholzen number six, I can't find a parking spot. For two reasons. First of all, because none of my neighbors can find a parking spot. They all go back to number six. But it's a lot worse, because the shuk of the Dalet Minim is set up there in front of number six, and that stretches you all the way out to the beginning of Shoals. Okay. So as you see, I'm a little bit frustrated about Masachich Bershus Aram.
You're going to stay down here for service?
Yeah. Here, to find a parking space the whole year round, this is just one headache, one absolute nightmare. But I think I beat the system. I think I found a parking space that nobody found. But I'm not going to tell you where it is. Don't ask me. But I think I found one. I'm not sure if it's legal, but I think I found one. So I want to share with you an insight of the Chazon Ish, and maybe we'll get a chance to read it inside. First, let me tell it to you outside. The Chazon Ish wants to claim that the issue of Sukkah Gzula should apply, A, if the schach is stolen, B, if the karka is stolen, but not C, if the defanos are stolen. So let me just try to summarize and flesh out what the Chazon Ish is saying. Let's leave out karka for a minute. Let's just focus our attention on schach and defanos. Defanos are the walls of the sukkah. I don't know, how would you say it in English? There's not another word, a better word for defanos?
Sadim.
You can see how the difference between Lashon Kodesh and any other language is because... Panels? Because in halachic terms, defanos has such a specific meaning. Like I once saw it, maybe in art school, I don't know where I saw it, that they translate the word get as a document. And that's such a mistake. Because a document in Lashon Kodesh, in Halach, is called a shtar. A get is fundamentally different than a shtar. A shtar doesn't have to be written lishma. A shtar doesn't have to be written by a sofer. So when you translate the word get into English as a document, as a marriage annulment document, or whatever they say there, you miss 90% in translation. Same thing is true in defanos. You know, you define defanos as walls or as, what was the word you used?
Panels.
Panels. You lose the whole point of what a dofen is. I mean, you could write an entire treatise on what the word dofen means in Allah.
It's used in pregnant women.
Of the birth canal or something along that line. Right, right. Why is there no psul of gozel in the defanos? So the Chazon Ish claims that there are no psulim whatsoever in defanos. You can use anything for a dofen. When it comes to schach, there are four categories of psulim in schach, of non-kosher schach, and none of them apply to a dofen. Comes along the Chazon Ish, and he says the same is true as far as gozel is concerned. That gozel, stolen, that applies to the schach. Okay, fine. So we're halfway there, but we haven't rounded third base towards home plate. Why? Because now we understand very well that if I throw you out of your sukkah, then I've stolen the schach because you own the schach. However, in the case where I set up my sukkah in Rishus HaRabim, there it's my schach. So in the worst case scenario, you could claim, well, the karka is stolen, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who holds karka in Igzelis. Oh, so the Chazon Ish wants to suggest that even if the karka is stolen, that's enough to passel the sukkah, make it into a sukkah gzul. Why? Because he says that the status of gozel expands, this is like the expansionary rule, to encompass the entire sukkah. Since the sukkah stands on the karka is the fun, is the what word can I say, the base, the what word am I looking for?
Foundation.
Excellent. Thank you. Foundation. That's the word I need. It's the foundation of the sukkah. The sukkah is attached to the karka. Then it becomes one entity. And it shoots up all the way to the schach. In other words, the same status of the karka as karka gzula, according to that mandioma, will apply to the schach, as if the schach was stolen. Because the sukkah is situated on the karka. Fantastic chiddush of the Chazon Ish. And therefore the Chazon Ish justifies that if you build a sukkah on karka versus a rabbin, therefore if you hold karka and exelis, you are now guilty, so to speak, of schach posel. And why is the schach posel? After all, it's your personal schach. No one can claim that you stole his schach because the karka is stolen. If the karka is stolen, that makes the schach into stolen schach. Now, I was thinking that maybe, based on this analysis, we could answer the other kasha that we asked before. And that is, why doesn't the Gemara address the issue of mitzvah bab avera? So what did you do? You stole karka, and you built a sukkah on the karka that was stolen. And we're holding now, like Rabbi Eliezer, that karka nigzelis. And therefore the sukkah is a sukkah gzula. So the Gemara is going to wonder what happens if you make a kinyan on that which you stole. For example, in the case of Eitzim, you stole trees, wood, and you use the wood as schach. So the schach is stolen Eitzim. So the Gemara wants to suggest, well, you made a kinyan on the Eitzim. Why? Because in Metaltalin, you can make a kinyan called Shinui Hashem. Okay, we have to understand exactly how that operates, but leave that on the side for me. So is it possible that we could suggest the following? That even though it's true that there's a relationship between the karka and the schach, that's only a structural relationship. Meaning, the binyan itself, the structure itself, shoots up from the karka, which is the foundation, as Phil said, all the way up to the schach. However, as far as mitzvah baba vera is concerned, there we have a different issue. Even if we solve the problem of lecha, meaning that this sukkah is not yours, and we can solve that problem perhaps because of karkein and igzeles, or through the kinyan of Shini Hashem in the case of schach, all that is wonderful. That's as far as ownership over the sukkah. So it's not guzzel, and it's not sha'ul, and it's your sukkah. Why you made a kinyan? Oh. But as far as the mitzvah is concerned, namely sitting in the sukkah now becomes the background to the mitzvah. What do I mean by the background to the mitzvah? I need to do a yeshiva. But it's not enough to do a yeshiva. I can sit in my house. That's not going to be a mitzvah of yeshiva besukkah. So I need a yeshiva besukkah. In the case of a lulav, in the case of a matzah, my mitzvah is implemented with the lulav or with the matzah. And therefore, if the lulav is stolen, or if what, the matzah is stolen, then the avera of gzela is directly related to the mitzvah itself. Meaning my mitzvah is to take the lulav, my mitzvah is to eat the matzah, and therefore my mitzvah is fulfilled through the avera. The avera itself is gezel. And now I'm taking a lulav hagozel, a matzah gzula, and I'm using it for a mitzvah. That's called mitzvah b'mavim. But if the background to the mitzvah, namely in the case of sukkah, that the structure of the sukkah is gozel, that would not possible the yeshiva b'sukkah. Because the yeshiva is independent of the sukkah, in the sense of the ma'aseh mitzvah is independent of the sukkah. However, the Torah says that where do I fulfill that ma'aseh mitzvah? In the sukkah. So the sukkah sets up the makom for the mitzvah. It's halacha and hilchos makom. It's like if I were to tell you, a mashal of my dover domen, if I were to tell you that there's a mizbeach and there's a beis hamikdash. The mizbeach needs the beis hamikdash. But the mitzvah of hakrovas hakorban is in the mizbeach, it's not in the mikdash. The mikdash sets up the mizbeach. So what I'm saying here also, I don't know if that's a good mashal, you'll think about it. What I'm suggesting is that the mitzvah is yeshiva. The yeshiva has to take place in a sukkah. Excuse me for just a moment, because I'm finding myself distracted. I just want to see what's going on here.
Very good. Next time, if you just notify me beforehand that there's a taburu going on. I was totally surprised. Okay.
I didn't know that there was a chabura going on. Nobody told me. if I would have known, I would have brought a microphone. So, you know, the microphone with ear, you know, with what do you call them? Earphones. All right. So, can you hear me? At least I don't hear myself, but you hear me? Okay, that's good.
But I don't agree with you.
Sometimes in Skype, you know, they hear you, you don't hear them.
I don't see this.
Okay, I'll get back to you in just a second. Let's give Phil, because Phil has to leave next week. So Phil, this is your chance for glory. I'm just kidding.
No glory.
Please. I'm just joking.
I'm thinking as you're saying all this that there's no bracha on building the sukkah. The only bracha is actually when you think about the bracha in the sukkah. There's no bracha for even going in to learn in the sukkah. The bracha is for eating in the sukkah.
Correct. But the eating is done in the sukkah, but not with the sukkah.
Right.
In the case of lulav,
on building the sukkah,
Nitilas lulav means that my mice is with the lulav.
Right.
So the lulav becomes a clear-cut cheftish of mitzvah. You remember we saw in the Yerushalmi that we discussed earlier this week that if the cheft of the mitzvah is an avera, then you want to take that. You want to take that aver dika cheftza, and you want to use it for a mitzvah. That's called mitzvah bav aver. You want to take a lulav agazel, and now you want to do a netila with a lulav agazel. You're taking the avera and using it for the ma'aser mitzvah. The aver itself sets up the ma'aser mitzvah. But in the case of yeshiva besukkah, the ma'aser mitzvah is done in the sukkah, but not with the sukkah or on the sukkah. You follow what I'm saying?
I'm not following. Because in the case of the lulav, you're picking it up and you're shaking it.
Right.
In the case of the matzah, you're eating it.
Right.
Right? Two different kinds of actions. Right. In this case, you're sitting in the sukkah. If you don't have the sukkah, you can't fulfill the mitzvah.
Correct, but you're sitting in the sukkah. You're not sitting with the sukkah. In other words, you're not doing any action with the sukkah. So when is there a psul of mitzvah baba vera? That's when you're doing an action with an object which is defined inherently. What status does it have? It has the status of a cheftish al avera. To take a cheftish al avera and convert it into a cheftish al mitzvah, that you can't do. But in the case of a sukkah where your maisa is not being done with the sukkah, actually, I would even go a step further. The sukkah sets up an avir hasukkah. It sets up a makom hasukkah. In other words, there's an abstract
it's
area.
Also.
Yeah.
It's a
chefzishal mitzvah. That's what I would say.
It might be a chefzishal mitzvah, but it's not a maisa mitzvah.
But
you follow what I'm saying? The maisa mitzvah is not done in the sukkah.
We say leishay basukkah. So now, what does ba mean? In Hebrew, it could mean with. It could mean in.
Right.
It could be either one. But you still need the
doing a ma'aser with a chefzah shavus.
But again, your ma'aser is not done with the chefzah. Your ma'aser is done as a yeshiva. Where does that yeshiva have to take place? In a certain location. To set up the location, I need a sukkah. But I wouldn't say that my ma'aser is being done on the sukkah. The sukkah is not... John, do you follow what I'm suggesting here?
You're saying that location is not as intrinsic to the activity as an actual contact.
No, that's good. I didn't know where you were going, Sam. Yeah. In other words, I have no contact with the sukkah. The sukkah is the background because it sets up a place, a location where I can fulfill my mitzvah of yeshiva.
You can hang in the sukkah. You don't have to stand on the floor. You can hang on a rope.
So
that makes location, which seems to be, according to what the rabbi is saying, less involved with activity as actual handling.
And when you say hang, you mean on a rope?
Yeah.
Yeah, but let's say I didn't even need a rope. Let's say I was Casper the Friendly Ghost, right? And all I do is float through the air of the sukkah. That also would be yeshiva besukkah. Again, you have to do it kedarko. I don't know exactly. But let's say you... So you never, ever use the sukkah for your mitzvah. The mitzvah sets up the sukkah sets up the mitzvah, but you never use the sukkah. When is there a psul of mitzvah baba vera? That's in the case where you use the avera. You use the object in which the... But, for example, we spoke about matzah. You remember we spoke about matzah shel tevel. I take the tevel, and now I eat the tevel. I take the matzah, which is gzula, and now I eat the matzah. I take the lulav, which is gozel, or I take the behema, which is stolen, and I put it on the mizbeach. So my ma'isa mitzvah is on an avera, on a chefetz shel avera. But if the chefetz shel avera is just setting up an area, you know, that's not mitzvah bo avera. Now, it could very well be that the sukkah is a sukkah psula, but that depends on whether you made a kinyan or not. So our whole sugya here on Daf Lamed Aleph about a stolen sukkah revolves around one issue and only one issue. Did he make a kinyan on the sukkah? If he did make a kinyan on the sukkah, then it's lachem. It's shivas yomim tasa lacha. It's lacha. But the Gemara never blinks an eye and raises the issue of what? Of mitzvah b'avera. Where did that get lost? So Tosis gives a different answer to this question. Tosis wants to claim that why doesn't the Gemara mention mitzvah b'avera? And Tosis answers because the mitzvah has to become machmas ha'avera. And if it's machmas ha'avera, then it's mitzvah b'avera. But here, he made a kinyan on the sukkah after he stole it. And once he makes a kinyan on it, it's no longer machmas ha'avera. So therefore, Tosis says that in the sugyan daf lamed of a lulav ha'gozel, if he made a kinyan on the lulav, it's no longer mitzvah baba vera. And why is that? Because now, when he takes the lulav, you can no longer say that he's taking the lulav machmas ha'avera, because now it's his lulav. So making a kinyan on it is going to undermine the principle of mitzvah baba vera. So the Gemara really solves the problem of lecha, but at the same time solves the problem of mitzvah baba vera. So the difference between Tosis and the way we suggested is that Tosis understands that the psul of mitzvah baba vera should apply to a sukkah gzula to the same extent that it applies to what?
Hello.
To a lulav hagozel. And therefore, what's our criterion for undermining the psul or terminating the psul of mitzvah baba vera? Kinyan. The Gemara here solves the problems of kinyan, and therefore we kill two birds with one stone. We kill the issue of lecha, because now you've acquired ownership over this sukkah. And at the same time, according to Tosis, we've solved the problem of mitzvah baba vera. We're suggesting that the Gemara never even entertained the problem of mitzvah baba vera in the case of sukkah, because there's no ma'aseh mitzvah on the sukkah or with the sukkah.
So Tosis admits that there is an issue.
Correct.
But
I thought that would make you very, very confident.
Now, I still don't see the difference.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. You don't have to see it. I'm just throwing out a possibility.
But you're not happy.
No, it's fine.
Okay, Rabbi, so let's take a few minutes to learn some halacha. I have here with me a book. I call it the picture book. The only question is, where did I put it? Let's see if I can find it. Did I put it in this brief? Does anybody see a book floating around here that has a lot of pictures in it? Okay, so much for that idea.
I see it the other day.
Yeah. Okay, I must have... So let's open up a Mishnah Berurah then, and I'll find that book somewhere. Hopefully. Okay. So yesterday we started focusing our attention on Siman Tuf Reish. What was it? Lamed Aleph.
Nunal.
Okay. So let's take a look at Siman Tov Reish Lamed Zayin. Do we have any extra copies of Mishnah Berurah? Yeah, underneath here. I don't know, Sam, if you want to look inside. So I'm just going to give you that option. If you want to take this. So if you can turn to page 200. I have one more. Going once, going twice. Right here. So the Machaber says the following. Yeah, page 200. You have it? And you're looking on the top line where it says Beis. You see the word, the letter Beis? He says, Yotzim besukah she'ula. He says you can fulfill the mitzvah of she'ula. Of sukkah with the sukkah she'ula. So I can invite you to my sukkah, or vice versa, and we can fulfill the mitzvah even though There's no ownership over the sukkah. This is against Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer holds that since it says in the pasuk lecha, you require ownership over the sukkah. We're going to accept the sheet of the Chachamim. And if you take a look at the Be'er HaGola on the right side, number Gimel, he says, Braisa Sham, Sham meaning Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, Uke Chachamim. And therefore you could be Yotze with Sha'ul. Now the Mechaber adds another dimension into the equation, and that is V'chein Yotzin B'shal Shutfis. I would have said that that's Pshita Maika Mashmala. You know, that's a Kal V'chomer. If you could be Yotze with someone else's sukkah, how much more so could you be Yotze if you're a Shutf, if you're a partner in the sukkah? So if you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, he says Kal V'chomer Misha'ula. So we said that even without looking at the Mishnah Berurah. I was hoping the Mishnah Berurah would tell me why the Mechaber felt compelled to add the case of Shutfus. He says, Kolshkein Khan in the case of Shutuf, the Yesh Lo Chelik Ba. But let's ask a different question. The Torah says, Shivas Yomim Tasa Lecha. Sukkah has to be Lecha. And Rabbi Eliezer, based on that Pasuk Lecha, tells you, you can't borrow someone's sukkah. You can't invite someone else and he'll be able to fulfill his mitzvah. So take a look at the Mishnah Berurah number Hey. And he says the following. Dichsiv. The Chachamim need another Pasuk. And that Pasuk is going to shed a light on the word Lecha. What's the other Pasuk? It says, Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael Yeshu B'Sukkos. Okay, any citizen of Israel could sit in the Sukkah. So that's a very harmless Pasuk. And he says that we darshan from this Pasuk in Torah Shebaal Peh that Molamed, it's coming to teach you Shekol Yisrael Ru'uyim Leshev Besuka Achas. Have you ever seen down there in what's it called, where the Iri Eye is?
Safra
Square. Have you ever seen that every year they have a big beautiful sukkah? I don't know if it could fit all of Klal Yisrael in it, but theoretically, if you built a sukkah that was large enough for every last Jew, we could all fulfill our mitzvah in one sukkah. And that's derived from the Pasuk Kol Ezrach Yisrael. So we have here a situation where it's impossible to assume that if everyone sits in the same sukkah, we're all shutfim in the sukkah. And therefore, it must mean that the Torah is telling me that you don't have to own the sukkah. So the Mishnah Berurah is not happy. Why? Because we have such a concept of shutfus for all of Klal Yisrael. There are many cases in which all of Klal Yisrael could become partners in one object, and we all own the object. On a daily basis, which carbon do we bring? Twice daily, carbon tamid. Who owns the carbon tamid? You own the carbon tamid. I own the carbon tamid. Sam owns the carbon. We all own the carbon tamid. That's called a shutfus of all of Klal Yisrael. So why not say that when the Torah says that there's a sukkah that's owned by all of Klal Yisrael, it means every last Jew has a shutfus in the sukkah, but you have to own part of the sukkah. So in order to answer this question, the Mishnah Berurah introduces a new concept here, which is called a shava pruta. And what that means is that in order to define your ownership on an object as a serious ownership, where we could say lecha, that I own the sukkah, I have to have at least a value of a shava pruta as my personal exclusive ownership. If I'm not the exclusive owner of a shava pruta, so let's say we have two shutfim on a sukkah. The sukkah is worth 100. So you own 50 and I own 50. Let's say we have three shutfim. So he owns 33.33. I think it's an irrational number if I remember correctly. Anyway, so he owns one third of the sukkah. Fine. And let's say we have four shutfims, each one owns 25 prutas of the sukkah.
Does it have to be equal?
No, it doesn't have to be equal. We can set up the shutfus in any way we want. But as long as each one of us has a shava pruta in the sukkah, comes along the Mishnah Berurah and he says, I'm just curious who he's quoting here. Oh, Yudal, if he tells you in the Sharet Siyun. He's quoting Rashi. Okay, I don't know where this Rashi is. We'll have to take a look. That if you have all of Klal Yisrael sitting in one sukkah, it's impossible that every single member of Klal Yisrael would own a private exclusive ownership that's worth a pruta. Okay. So if that be the case, Rabosai, we can now answer our original question. Why does the Mechaber feel compelled to add Shut Vesia? And the answer is that the Mechaber wants to tell you that even if the shutvus is such that it's impossible for any particular shutv to own a shava pruta's worth, even that case is kosher. You don't even have to own a pruta's worth of the sukkah. Then we get to halacha gimel. Sukkah gzula kshera. This is a little bit strange. I mean, we said that the word lecha should be interpreted in the light of Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael. That lecha means that you don't have to own the sukkah. Okay, if you don't have to own the sukkah, so why does the Torah say lecha? And the answer is to exclude a stolen sukkah. Now, if it's a stolen sukkah, how could the Mechaber say sukkah gzula kshera? In other words, you can't have both. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say in halacha beis that a sheula is kosher, and then in halacha gimel say that a gzula is kosher. Oh, ketzad. So the Mechaber wants to answer this question. And he basically says the following, that it doesn't mean that every stolen sukkah is kosher, but in a very specific case, a stolen sukkah is kosher. Ketzad? In Tokaf, al chavero. Again, I don't understand the Hebrew grammar here. Why he says al chavero? I would have said Tokaf chavero. Anyway, Tokaf chavero, he attacked his friend, Votzio, and he physically ejected him from the sukkah. And he steals the sukkah and he sits in it. Yotza. Ah, that's the case of a sukkah gzula that's kshera. Why is it kshera? Because ein karka d'gzelas, he didn't steal the sukkah. But if he would steal a sukkah, what would be the case where he steals a sukkah? The no Lubavitchers here in the audience, right? A mitzvah tank. Not a mitzvah tank. What do they call it when the sukkah goes by on the... Have you ever seen it?
Mitzvah mobile.
The mitzvah mobile, excellent. In the case of the mitzvah mobile, if I would steal, you know, take the Lubavitcher out of the truck, or whatever he's driving there, and eject him, and take over the truck, and sit in that sukkah that's built on the back of the open truck, then it would be possible. That's called a sukkah gzula, because it's a mobile sukkah, and therefore it's not a contradiction to the principle of karka einin gzelus. If you take a person out of his sukkah, he still remains in possession of the sukkah, because karka, wherever it is always considered becheskas baleha. But if it's a mobile sukkah, then that's called a sukkah gzul. Now, would I be allowed lechatchila to throw you out of your sukkah and sit in the sukkah? Says the Ramon, miu lechatchila lo yeshev adam besukas chavero shalom midaito. He goes even very far here. He says, let's say in the middle of the night, I sneak into your sukkah, and I eat a kibetza, a kezayis worth of pas. That itself, if I don't have your permission to do so, is prohibited. Now this is a little bit strange here, because if you remember, the Chazon Ish said that a sukkah gzula has to apply to one of two things. Either the schach is stolen, or the karka is stolen. Now we're saying karka ain't an exelus. So you can't start with the gezel on the karka and say that it expands to the schach. So what exactly am I stealing from you here? In other words, the schach has the status of the karka. It's all mechubel karka, and we're holding now the karka ain't an exelus. So what is the problem with using someone else's sukkah? It's not a sukkah gzula. So if you take a look at the Mishnah Brura, he says the following. Shema balas sukkah hu makpid al zeh. The balas sukkah doesn't want you to go into his sukkah. So Chabosai, what am I stealing here? I'm not stealing the sukkah. What am I stealing? Anybody? Can anybody help me out over here? No, don't all answer at once. I can't hear all so many voices at once. What am I stealing?
You want to say use.
Even more than that. By using your sukkah, I'm stealing the avira sukkah. You see, this comes back to mitzvah baba vera. I claim that there's no mitzvah baba vera in the sukkah. Why? Because I'm not using your sukkah. Your sukkah that's stolen is only setting up an airspace for me to be mekayim in the midst of yeshiva. But let's say I would steal your airspace. That would be mitzvah baba vera. So here we have a case where I'm stealing your airspace. Why? So you don't allow me to use your airspace because you want that airspace for yourself. The Mishnah Berurah says, why do you want it for yourself? Shelo yireh chavero sasoka vesachiloso beliyadi aso. Maybe it's a privacy issue. I don't know. I don't understand the psychology here. He tells you, you know, the reason why you don't. He doesn't want to say that you're just a no good bum, and you don't want someone to use your. That would be tzaras ayin. How do you say that in English? Tzaras ayin. When you don't fagin someone, there's an English word for it, but again, I can't remember it. Anyway, I'm very self centered, and I don't. It's a kind of selfishness. No. He says that if you start using my sukkah, then it somehow is going to, again, I don't know why exactly, it's going to undermine my privacy. Maybe because I do things in the sukkah, and now you came into the sukkah, maybe I don't want you to look at my sukkah. I don't want you to get any good ideas from my sukkah. I don't know what. Is there anybody here who has a good idea about how to use the sukkah? I have one. I take my cell phone into the sukkah. So you'll say to me, Rabbi Berzman, with all due respect, to take a cell phone into the sukkah, adarabah, take your cell phone into the sukkah. Why?
It's the way you live.
Exactly. Teshu kein taduru. Now, I don't use my cell phone as often as my wife, Tzilzangizun. She does a lot of texting. I call her the expert in texting. And I think she should give a course called Textiology 101 because she's always texting and she tells me how that's so critical in her work, that texting is absolutely critical. I find texting a little bit offensive to the people around you, I don't know, but she says it's absolutely necessary. So Teshu K to do, if I took away my wife's smartphone and told her to sit in the sukkah without a smartphone. All right, she's potter anyway from the mitzvah sukkah. It's mitzvah say she has my grammar. But she wants to be mekayim the mitzvah sukkah. My wife even makes a bracha on the sukkah. She told me that her grandmother did not make a bracha on the sukkah. But she's from the modern generation, you know, the Beis Yaakov of the Lower East Side. And there, in Esther Schoenfeld, they encourage the girls to make a bracha on the sukkah if they sit in sukkah. Apparently it wasn't necessarily so in the old country. I don't know why not. There must be sociological reasons for that. But my wife's grandmother, my daughter's named after my wife's grandmother says that back in the old country, in Poland, the women did not make a bracha on the sukkah. It makes no sense, halachically. Because my wife's grandmother, her name was Ratza. And we had a problem when my daughter was born, shortly after my wife's grandmother passed away, we were a little bit hesitant about naming her Ratza. Can anyone guess why? You know anyone by the name of Ratza? I know a Fagel, and I know a Sprinzer, and I know all sorts of strange Fruma names. But Ratza is going a little bit far. Do you know what the word Ratza means? It's a weasel. Now the Gemara says that one of our Nevios was Chulda. And the Gemara says that the weasel knows exactly where to find the chametz in your house. So the Gemara says, why? Chulda Nevi'ahi? Right. So we felt a little bit uncomfortable about naming our daughter after a weasel, even though Baba Ratza was a very holy woman. So I asked Rav Cohen, did anyone know he's gone already? Eliezer Lipman Cohen. He was married to a young rice. His son-in-law is one of the heads of the computer program at Machon Lev, at Machon LeTechnologie. His name is Abba Engelberg. He lives up the block. Right. So Abba Engelberg Schwer was my Rebbe for Hilchas Gittin. He was considered the final word after Rav Henkin passed away on Shemus Begit. And I had this chus of learning by him 1 year. Hilchas Gittin. He had notebooks full of shiurim on names in Gittin. You could spend your entire lifetime figuring out how to write a name in a get. I'll never forget, I was witness of a get to a woman, a convert. She was French. Her name was Viviev. No. Her name was Genevieve. And it took him a half hour to figure out how to write Genevieve. They have never heard the name Genevieve. So we asked Rav Cohen, because he was an expert in Sheamus, what should I do in this problem? I want to name my daughter after her great-grandmother who passed away, my wife's grandmother, but I don't want to give her the name Ratza. So he said to name her Raya, Reish Ayin Yud Heh. Because in Shir HaShirim, the Raya represents Klal Yisrael. So that's why, hence, my daughter's name is Raya. How did I get into this? I have no recollection of where I got caught into this. Anyway, so what does he say over here? He says that lechatchila you shouldn't use someone's sukkah without,
if he's there,
without permission. Why? So the Mishnah Berurah says he's makvid, he doesn't want you to sit in his sukkah, and therefore you have to get permission. Why is it so quiet out there? Oh, the Davening. Okay. So I wish everyone a great Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom. And let's try to catch Mincha.